No, said Boris, glowering suddenly and pushing back in his chair. You will not. No, no, fuck you, shut up, you won't, he said, lifting his chin aggressively when I tried to talk over him. Gyuri's hand on my wrist, very suddenly, a touch I knew very well. The old, forgotten Vegas language, when my dad was in the kitchen ranting about whose house it was and who paid for what. And, said Boris imperiously, taking advantage of a lull in my response he was not expecting. I want you to stop talking this stupid call business right away. Call, call, he said when he got no answer from me, waving his hand back and forth ridiculously in the air as if call were some absurd kiddie word that meant unicorn or fairyland. I know you are trying to help, but this is not helpful suggestion on your part. So forget it. No more call. Anyway, he said amiably, pouring part of his own beer into my half-empty glass, as I was explaining to you, since Sasha is in so big hurry, is he thinking clearly? Is he playing more than one, or maybe two moves ahead? No. Sasha is out of towner. His connections here are poisonous to him. He needs money, and he is working so hard to stay clear of Horst that he has wandered smack into me. I said nothing. It would be easy enough to phone the police myself. There was no reason to involve Boris or Gyuri at all. Amazing stroke of luck, no? And our friend the Georgian, very rich man, but so far from Horst World and so far from Art Collector, he did not even know of picture by name. Just a bird, little yellow bird. But Cherry believes he's telling the truth that he saw it. Very powerful guy in terms of real estate, here and in Antwerp. Plenty of paper, and father to Cherry almost, but not person of great education, if you understand me. Where is it now? Boris rubbed his nose vigorously. I do not know. They are not going to tell us that, are they? But Vitya has got in touch to say he knows of a buyer, and a meeting has been set up. Where? Not settled yet. They have already changed the location half a dozen times. Paranoid, he said, making a screw-loose gesture at the side of his head with his hand. They may make us wait a day or two. We may know only an hour before. Cherry, I said, and stopped. Vitya was short for Cherry's Russian name, Viktor. Victor, the anglicized version. But Cherry was only a nickname, and I didn't know a thing about Sasha. Not his age, not his surname, not what he looked like. Nothing at all except that he was Ulrika's brother. And even this was uncertain in the literal sense, given how loosely Boris threw around the word. Boris sucked a bit of grease off his thumb. My idea was, set up something at your hotel. You know, you, American, big shot, interested in the picture. They, he lowered his voice as the waitress switched his empty pint for a full one, Gyuri nodding politely, leaning in. They would come to your room. That's how it's done, usually. All very businesslike. But, minimal shrug, they are new at this and paranoid. They want to call their own location. Which is?
Don't know yet, didn't I just say? They keep changing their mind. If they want us to wait, we wait. We have to let them think they are boss.
Now, sorry, he said, stretching and yawning, rubbing a dark circled eye with a fingertip.
I am tired.
Want a nap?
He turned and said something to Gyuri in Ukrainian and then turned back to me.
Sorry,
he said, leaning in and slinging his arm around my shoulder. You can find your way back to your hotel?
I tried to disengage myself without seeming to. Right. Where are you staying?
Girlfriend's flat. Zidek. Near Zidek, said Gyuri, rising purposefully with a polite and vaguely military air. Chinese quarter of the old times.
What's the address?
Cannot remember. You know me. I cannot remember addresses in my head and like that. But,
Boris tapped his pocket.
Your hotel.
Right.
Back in Vegas, if we ever got separated, running from the mall cops, pockets full of stolen gift cards, my house was always the rendezvous point.
So, I'll meet you back there, and you have my phone number and I have yours. We'll call you when I know something more.
Now, slapping me on the back of the head.
Stop worrying, Potter. Don't stand there and look so unhappy. If we lose, we win, and if we win, we win. Everything is good.
You know which way to go to get back, don't you?
Just up this way, and left when you get to the signal.
Yes, there.
We will speak soon.
5. I took a wrong turn on the way to the hotel, and for several hours wandered aimlessly. Shops decorated with glass baubles and gray dream alleys with unpronounceable names, gilded Buddhas and Asian embroideries, old maps, old harpsichords, cloudy, cigar-brown shops with crockery and goblets and antique Dresden jars. The sun had come out, and there was something hard and bright by the canals, a breathable glitter. Gulls plunged and cried. A dog ran by with a live crab in its mouth. In my lightheadedness and fatigue, which made me feel drastically cut off from myself and as if I were observing it all at a remove, I walked past candy shops and coffee shops and shops with antique toys and Delft tiles from the 1800s, old mirrors and silver glinting in the rich, cognac-colored light, inlaid French cabinets and tables in the French court style with garlanded carvings and veneer work that would have made Hobie gasp with admiration. In fact, the entire foggy, friendly, cultivated city, with its florists and bakeries and antique handles, reminded me of Hobie, not just for its antique crowded richness, but because there was a Hobie-like wholesomeness to the place, like a children's picture book where aproned tradespeople swept the floors and tabby cats napped in sunny windows. But there was much too much to see, and I was overwhelmed and exhausted and cold. Finally, by accosting strangers, rosy housewives with armloads of flowers, tobacco-stained hippies in wire-rimmed glasses, I retraced my path over canal bridges and back through narrow, fairy-lit streets to my hotel, where I immediately changed some dollars at the front desk, went up for a shower in the bathroom, which was all curved glass and voluptuous fixtures, hybrid of the Art Nouveau and some icy, pod-based science fiction future, and fell asleep face down on the bed, where I was awakened, hours later, by my cell phone spinning on the bed table, the familiar chirrup making me think, for a moment, I was at home.
Potter?
I sat up and reached for my glasses. I hadn't drawn the curtains before I fell asleep, and reflections of the canal wavered across the ceiling in the dark.
What's wrong? Are you high? Don't tell me you went to a coffee shop.
No, I... Dazedly, I slid an eye around. Dormers and beams, cupboards and slants, and out the window when I stood, rubbing my head, canal bridges lighted in tracework, arched reflections on black water.
Well, I'm coming up. You don't have a girl up there, do you?
6. My room was 2 different elevators and a walk from the front desk, so I was surprised how quickly the knock came. Gyuri, discreetly, went to the window and stood with his back to us while Boris looked me over.
Get dressed, he said.
I was barefoot in the hotel robe and my hair standing on end from falling asleep straight out of the shower.
You need to clean up. Go, comb your hair and shave.
When I emerged from the bathroom, where I'd left my suit hanging to let the wrinkles fall out, he pursed his lips critically and said,
Don't you have anything better than that?
This is a Turnbull and Asser suit.
Yes, but it looks like you slept in it.
I've been wearing it a while. I have a better shirt.
Well, put it on.
He was opening a briefcase on the foot of the bed.
And get your money and bring it here.
When I came back in, doing up my cufflinks, I stopped dead in the middle of the room to see him standing head-bent at the bedside, intent upon assembling a pistol, snapping a pin with a clear-eyed competence like Hobie at work in the shop, pulling back the slide with a forceful, true-to-life quality. Click. Boris, I said. What the motherfuck?
Calm down, he said to me with a sideways glance, patting his pockets, taking out a magazine and popping it in. Snick.
Is not what you think. Not at all. It's just for show.
I looked at Guri's broad back, perfectly impassive, the same professional deafness I sometimes turned away to assume in the shop when couples were bickering over whether to buy a piece of furniture or not.
It is just...
He was snapping something back and forth on the gun, expertly, testing it, then bringing it up to his eye and sighting it. Surreal gestures from some deep underlayer of the brain where the black and white movies flickered 24 hours a day.
We are meeting them on their own ground, and they will be three. Well, really only two. Two that count. And I can tell you now, I was a little worried Sasha might be here, because then I couldn't go with you. But everything has worked out perfectly, and here I am.
Boris, standing there, it had crashed in on me all at once, in a sick rush. What a dumb fucking thing I'd stepped into.
No worries. I have done the worrying for you, because,
patting me on the shoulder,
Sasha is too nervous. He is afraid to show his face in Amsterdam, afraid it will get back to Horst, for good reason. And this is very, very good news for us.
So, he snapped the gun shut, chrome silver, mercury black, with a smooth density that blackly distorted the space around it like a drop of motor oil in a glass of water. Don't tell me you're taking that, I said, in the incredulous silence that followed.
Well, yes, for holster, to keep in holster only. But wait, wait, he said, lifting a palm. Before you start,
although I wasn't talking, I was only standing there blank with horror.
How many times do I have to say it? He's only for looks.
You've got to be kidding.
Dress up,
he said briskly, as if I had not spoken.
Pure make-believe. So they will be worried to try something if they see it on me, okay?
He added, when I still stood staring.
Safety measure. Because, he said over me, you are the rich man, and we are the bodyguards, and this is how it is. They will expect it, all very civilized. And if we move our coat just so,
he had a concealed carry holster at his waist,
they will be respectful and not try anything. Much more dangerous to wander in like...
He rolled his eyes around the room in the manner of a daffy girl. Boris, I felt ashen and woozy. I can't do this.
Can't what?
He pulled back his chin and looked at me.
Can't get out of the car and stand with me for 5 minutes while I get your fucking picture for you? What?
No, I mean it. The gun was lying on the bedspread. The eye was drawn to it. It seemed to crystallize and magnify all the bad energy humming in the air. I can't. Seriously. Let's just forget it.
Forget?
Boris made a face.
Don't do this. You have brought me over here for nothing, and now I am in a pinch. And now,
flinging out an arm,
last minute you start making conditions and saying unsafe, unsafe, and telling me how to do things? Don't you trust me?
Yes, but...
Well then, trust me on this, please. You're the buyer,
he said impatiently when I didn't answer.
That's the story. It's been set up.
We should have talked about this earlier.
Oh, come on,
he said in exasperation, picking the gun off the bed and sticking it into the holster.
Please, do not argue with me. We're going to be late. You would never have seen it at all if you stayed in the bathroom 2 minutes longer. Never known I had a weapon on me at all. Because, Potter, listen to me. Will you listen, please? Here is all that will happen. We walk in. 5 minutes. Stand, stand, stand. We do all the talking. Talk only. You get your picture, everyone is happy, we leave and we go get some dinner, okay?
Guri, who had moved over from the window, was looking me up and down. With a worried frown, he said something to Boris in Ukrainian. An obscure exchange followed. Then Boris reached to his wrist and began to unbuckle his wristwatch. Guri said something else, shaking his head vigorously.
Right, said Boris. You are right.
Then, to me, with a nod, take his. Platinum Rolex President, diamond-crusted dial. I was trying to think of some polite way to refuse when Guri pulled the whopping bevel-cut diamond off his pinky and, hopefully, like a child presenting a homemade gift, held them both to me on his open hands.
Yes, said Boris when I hesitated. He is right. You do not look rich enough. I wish we had some different shoes for you,
he said, looking critically at my black monk straps.
But those will have to work. Now, we will put the money in this bag here, leather grip, full of stacked bills, and go.
Working quickly, clever hands, like a hotel maid making a bed.
Biggest bills on top. All these nice hundreds. Very pretty.
7. Out on the street, holiday splendor and delirium. Reflections danced and shimmered on black water. Laced arcades above the street, garlands of light on the canal boats.
This is all going to be very easy and comfortable, said Boris,
who was clicking around on the radio past Bee Gees, past news in Dutch, in French, trying to find a song.
I am counting on the fact that they want this money quick. Sooner they get rid of the picture, less chance running crossways of Horst. They will not be looking too closely at that bank draft or deposit slip. That 600,000s figure is all they will see.
I was sitting alone in the back seat with the bag of money.
Because you must accustom yourself, sir, to being distinguished passenger,
Guri had said when he circled around and opened the back door of the car for me to get in.
You see, what I hope will fool him, deposit slip is perfectly legitimate, Boris was saying. So is bank draft. It is just from bad bank. Anguilla. Russians and Antwerp. Here, too, on PC Hofstraat. They come here to invest, wash money, buy art. Ha! This bank was fine 6 weeks ago, but it is not fine now.
We were past the canals, past the water. On the street, multicolored neon angels in silhouette, leaning out from the tops of the buildings like ship figureheads. Blue spangles, white spangles, tracers, cascades of white lights and Christmas stars, blazing, impenetrable, no more to do with me than the implausible pinky diamond glittering on my hand.
See, what I have to tell you, said Boris, forgetting the radio and turning to address me in the back seat. I want to tell you not to worry, with all my heart,
he said, knitting his eyebrows and reaching out encouragingly to shake my shoulder.
Everything is fine. Piece of cake, said Guri,
and beamed in the rearview mirror, happy to have produced the phrase.
Here is plan. Do you want to know the plan?
I guess I'm supposed to say yes.
We are dropping the car off, out of the city a bit. Then Cherry will meet us at location and drive us to meeting in his car.
And this is all going to be peaceful.
Absolutely. And because why? You have the cash. That's all they want. And even with fake bank draft, good deal for them. $40,000 for no work? Not much. Afterwards, Cherry will leave us back at the garage with the picture. And then we go out. We celebrate.
Guri muttered something.
He is complaining about the garage. Just so you know, he thinks it is a bad idea, but I do not want to go in my own car. And last thing we need is to get hit with a parking ticket.
Where is the meeting?
Well, a bit of a headache. We have to drive out of the city and then back in. They insisted on their own place, and Cherry agreed because, well, really, it is better. At least on their ground we can count on no interference from the cops.
We had gotten to a lonelier stretch of road, straight and desolate, where the traffic was sparse and the street lamps were farther apart, and the bracing crack and sparkle of the old city, its lighted tracery, its hidden design, silver skates, happy children beneath the tree, had given way to a more familiar urban bleakness. Foto cadeau, locksmith, slutel class, signs in Arabic, shawarma, tandoori kebab, gates down, everything closed.
This is the Overtum,
said Guri.
Not very interesting or nice. This is my boy Dima's parking garage. He has put out the full sign for tonight so no one to bother us. We will be in the long term. Ah, he screamed. Blad!
As a honking van cut in front of us from nowhere, forcing Guri to swerve and slam on the brakes.
Sometimes people here are a little bit aggressive for no reason,
said Guri gloomily, as he put on his blinker and made the turn into the garage.
Give me your passport, Boris said.
Why?
Because I'm going to lock it in the glove box for when we get back.
Better not to have it on you, just in case. I am putting in mine, too,
he said, holding it up for me to see.
And Guri's. Guri is honest born American citizen.
Yes, he said over Guri's laughing interjection.
All very nice for you, but for me? Very, very hard to get an American passport, and I really do not want to lose this thing. You know, don't you, Potter,
he said, looking at me,
that you are required now by law in Netherlands to carry ID at all times?
Random street checks? Non-compliance punished. I mean, Amsterdam? What kind of police state thing is this? Who would believe it? Here? Me? Never. Not in 100 years. Anyway,
shutting and locking the glove box,
better a fine and talk our way out of it than the real thing on us if we are stopped.
8. Inside the parking garage, which vibrated depressingly with olive green light, there were a number of empty spaces in the long-term area despite the full sign. As we nosed into the space, a man in a sports coat lounging against a white Range Rover threw his cigarette in a spit of orange cinders and walked toward the car. His receding hairline, his tinted aviators, and his taut military torso gave him the wind-whipped look of an ex-pilot, a man who monitored delicate instruments at some test site in the Urals.
Victor, he said, when we got out of the car, crushing my hand in his.
Guri and Boris received a thump on the back. After terse preliminaries in Russian, a baby-faced, curly-headed teenager climbed out of the driver's seat and was greeted by Boris with a slap on the cheek and a jaunty 7-note whistle on the good ship lollipop.
This is Shirley T, he said to me, rumpling the corkscrew curls. Shirley Temple. We all call him that. Why? Can you guess?
Laughing as the kid, unable to help it, smiled in embarrassment, displaying deep dimples.
Do not be deceived by looks,
said Guri to me quietly.
Shirley looks like baby, but he has as much onions as any of us here.
Politely, Shirley nodded at me. Did he speak English? It didn't seem so, and opened the back door of the Range Rover for us, and the three of us climbed in back, Boris, Guri, and me, while Victor Cherry sat up front and talked to us from the passenger's seat.
This should be easy,
he said to me formally, as we pulled out of the garage and back out onto the Overtum.
Straightforward pawn.
Up close, his face was broad and knowing, with a small, prim mouth and a wry alertness that made me feel somewhat less agitated about the logic of the evening, or the lack of it. The car changes, the lack of direction and information, the nightmare foreignness.
We are doing Sasha a favor, and because of that, he is going to behave nice to us.
Long, low buildings. Disjointed lights. There was a sense that it wasn't happening. That it was happening to someone who wasn't me.
Because can Sasha walk in bank and get a loan on the painting?
Victor was saying, pedantically.
No. Can Sasha walk in a pawn shop and get a loan on the painting? No. Can Sasha, due to circumstances of theft, go to any of his usual connections from Horst and get a loan on the painting? No. Therefore, Sasha is extremely glad of the appearance of Mystery American. You. Who I have hooked him up with.
Sasha shoots heroin the way that you and I breathe,
said Guri to me quietly.
One stitch of money, and he is out buying big load of drugs like clockwork.
Victor Cherry adjusted his glasses.
Exactly. He is not art lover, and he is not particular. He is utilizing picture like high-interest credit card, or so he thinks. Investment for you, cash for him. You front him the money, you hold the painting as security. He buys Schmeck, keeps half, steps on the rest and sells it, and returns with double your money in 1 month to pick up the painting. And if, in 1 month, he does not return with double your money, the painting is yours. Like I said, simple pawn.
Except not so simple.
Boris stretched and yawned.
Because when you vanish and bank draft is bad, what can he do?
If he runs to Horst and calls for help on this one, he will have his neck broken for him.
I am glad they have changed the meeting place so many times. It is a little bit ridiculous, but it helps because today is Friday,
said Victor, taking off his aviators and polishing them on his shirt.
I made them think you were backing out, because they kept canceling and changing the plan. You did not even arrive until today, but they do not know that, because they kept changing the plan. I told them you were tired and nervous of sitting around Amsterdam with suitcase of green waiting to hear from them. You'd rebanked your monies and were flying back to U.S. They did not like to hear that. So,
he nodded at the bag.
Here it is, the weekend, and the banks are closed, and you are bringing what cash you have, and, well, they have been talking to me plenty, lots of time on the phone, and I have met with them once already down in a bar in the red light, but they have agreed to bring the painting and make the exchange tonight without prior meeting of you, because I have told them your plane leaves tomorrow, and because they have fucked around on their end, it is bank draft for the balance or nothing. Which, well, they did not like, but they accepted as proper explanation for bank draft. Makes things easier.
Much easier, said Boris.
I was not sure how bank draft was going to go over. Better if they think the bank draft is their own fault for dicking around.
What's the place?
Lunch cafe.
He pronounced it as one word.
The Persico.
That means the purple cow in Dutch, said Boris helpfully. Hippie place, close to the red light.
Long, lonely street. Shut-up hardware stores. Bricks of brick by the side of the road. All of it important and hyper-significant somehow, even though it was speeding by in the dark much too fast to see.
Food is so awful, said Boris. Sprouts and some hard old wheat toast. You would think hot girls go there, but it's just old gray-haired women and fat.
Why there?
Because quiet street in the evening, said Victor Cherry. Lunch cafe is closed after hours, but because semi-public, nothing will get out of control, see?
Everywhere. Strangeness. Without noticing it, I'd left reality and crossed the border into some no-man's land where nothing made sense. Dreaminess. Fragmentation. Rolled wire and piles of rubble with the plastic sheeting blown to the side. Boris was speaking to Victor in Russian, and when he realized I was looking at him, he turned to me.
We are only saying Sasha is in Frankfurt tonight, he said, hosting party at a restaurant for some friend of his just got out of jail, and we are all of us confirmed on this from three different sources, Shirley too. He thinks he is being smart staying out of town. If it gets back to Horst what has happened here tonight, he wants to be able to throw up his hands and say, who, me? I had nothing to do with it.
You, said Victor to me, you are based in New York. I have said you are an art dealer, arrested for forgery, and now run an operation like Horst's. Much smaller scale in terms of paintings, much larger in terms of money.
Horst, God bless him, said Boris. Horst would be the richest man in New York, except he gives it all away. Every cent. Always has. Supports many, many persons besides himself.
Bad for business.
Yes, but he enjoys company.
Junkie philanthropist, ha, said Victor. Good they die off time to time, or who knows how many schmeckheads crammed in that dump with him. Anyway, less you say in there the better. They will not be expecting polite conversation. This is all business. It will be fast,
Give him the bank draft, Borya.
Boris said something sharp in Ukrainian.
No, he should produce it himself. It should be from his hand.
Both bank draft and deposit slip were printed with the name Faruko Frantisek, Citizen Bank Anguilla, which only increased the sense of dream trajectory, a track speeding up too fast to slow down. Faruko Frantisek? I'm him? Under the circumstances, it felt like a meaningful question, as if I might be somehow disembodied or at least had passed beyond a certain horizon where I was freed of basic facts like identity.
I did not choose the name. I had to take what I could get.
I'm supposed to introduce myself as this? There was something wrong with the paper, which was too flimsy, and the fact that the slip said Citizen Bank and not Citizens Bank made them look all wrong.
No, Cherry will introduce you.
Faruko Frantisek. Silently, I tried the name out, turned my tongue around it. Even though it was a hard name to remember, it was just strong and foreign enough to carry the lost-in-space hyper-density of the black streets, tram tracks, more cobblestones and neon angels. Back in the old city now, historic and unknowable, canals and bicycle racks and Christmas lights shaking on the dark water.
When were you going to tell him?
Victor Cherry was asking Boris.
He needs to know what his name is.
Well, now he knows.
Unknown streets, incomprehensible turns, anonymous distances. I'd stopped even trying to read the street signs or keep track of where we were. Of everything around me, of all I could see, the only point of reference was the moon, riding high above the clouds, which though bright and full seemed weirdly unstable somehow, void of gravity, not the pure anchoring moon of the desert, but more like a party trick that might pop out at a conjurer's wink, or else float away into the darkness and out of sight. 9. The Purple Cow was on an untraveled one-way street just wide enough for a car to go through. All the other businesses around, pharmacy, bakery, bike shop, were shut tight, everything but an Indonesian restaurant on the far end. Shirley Temple let us off out front. On the opposite wall, graffiti, smiley face and arrows, warning radioactive, stenciled lightning bolt with the word Shazam, dripping horror movie letters.
Keep it nice.
I looked in through the glass door. The place was long and narrow and, at first glance, empty. Purple walls, stained glass ceiling lamp, mismatched tables and chairs, painted kindergarten colors, and the lights low except for a grill-side counter area and a lighted cold case glowing in back. Sickly houseplants, signed black-and-white photo of John and Yoko, bulletin board shaggy with leaflets and flyers for satsangs and yoga classes and varied holistic modalities. On the wall was a mural of the tarot Arcana, and, in the window, a flimsy computer-printed menu featuring a number of Everett-style whole foods. Carrot soup, nettle mash, lentil nuts pie. Nothing very appetizing, but it made me remember that the last, honest-to-God, more-than-a-few-bites meal I'd eaten had been the takeout curry in bed back at Kitsie's. Boris saw me looking at it.
I am hungry, too, he said, rather formally. We will go get a really good dinner together. Blake's. 20 minutes.
You're not going in?
Not yet.
He was standing slightly to the side, out of view of the glass doors, looking up and down the street. Shirley Temple was circling the block.
Don't be here talking to me. Go with Victor and Gyuri.
The man who sloped up to the glass door of the cafe was a scrawny, sketchy, twitchy-looking guy in his 60s, with a long, narrow face and long freak hair past his shoulders, and a peaked denim cap straight from Soul Train 1973. He stood there with his ring of keys and looked past Victor to me and Gyuri, and seemed undecided whether to let us in. His close-set eyes, his brushy gray eyebrows, and his puffy gray mustache gave him the look of a suspicious old schnauzer dog. Then another guy appeared, much, much younger and much, much bigger, half a head taller even than Gyuri, Malaysian or Indonesian, with a face tattoo, and eye-popping diamonds in his ears, and a black topknot on the crown of his head that made him look like one of the harpooners from Moby Dick. If one of the harpooners from Moby Dick had happened to be wearing velvet track pants and a peach satin baseball jacket. The old tweaker was making a call on his mobile. He waited, his eyes cagily honest the whole while. Then he made another call and turned his back and walked away into the depths of the lunch cafe, talking, palm pressed to cheek and ear in the manner of an hysterical housewife, while the Indonesian stood in the glass door and watched us, unnaturally still. There was a brief exchange, and then the old tweaker returned, and with wrinkled brow and seeming reluctance, began fumbling with the key ring, turning the key in the lock. The minute we were in, he began yammering to Victor Cherry and throwing his arms about, while the Indonesian strolled over and leaned against the wall with his arms folded, listening. Some disturbance, definitely. Discomfort. What language were they speaking? Romanian? Czech? What it was about, I had not a clue, but Victor Cherry seemed cold and annoyed while the old gray-haired tweaker grew more and more agitated. Angry? No. Irritable. Frustrated. Wheedling, even. A whine climbing in his voice. And all the time the Indonesian kept his eyes on us with the unsettling stillness of an anaconda. I stood about 10 feet away and, despite Gyuri, with Moneybag, pressing in on me much too close, put on a self-consciously blank expression and pretended to examine the signs and slogans on the wall. Greenpeace, fur-free zone, vegan-friendly, protected by angels. Having bought enough drugs in enough dodgy situations, cockroach apartments in Spanish Harlem, piss-smelling stairwells in the St. Nicholas Projects, I knew enough not to be interested, since, in my experience anyway, transactions of this nature were mostly the same. You acted relaxed and disengaged, didn't talk unless you had to, and spoke in a monotone when you did, and, as soon as you got what you came for, left. "Protected by angels, my ass," said Boris, in my ear, having sidled up noiselessly on my other side. I said nothing. Even all these years later, it was all too easy for us to fall into the habit of whispering with our heads together, like in Spirsitskaya's class, which seemed like not a good dynamic in the situation.
"We are on time," said Boris, "but one of their men has not shown. That is why Grateful Dead here is so jumpy. They want us to wait till he comes. It is their own fault for changing the meeting place so often."
"What's going on over there?"
"Let Vitya handle it," he said,
poking his shoe at a desiccated fur ball on the floor.
"Dead mouse?"
I thought, with a start, before realizing it was a chewed-up cat toy, one of several strewn across the floor beside a clumped and piss-darkened cat tray which lay half-hidden, turds and all, at the base of a table for four. I was wondering how a dirty cat tray placed where diners were likely to step in it was possibly convenient in terms of food service logistics, not to mention attractive or healthful or even legal, when I realized the talking had stopped and the two of them had turned to Gyuri and me, Victor Cherry, the old tweaker with a wary, expectant look, stepping forward, his eyes darting from me to the bag in Guri's hand. Obligingly, Gyuri stepped forward, opened it, set it down with a servile bow of his head, and stepped away for the old guy to look at. The old guy peered in, nearsightedly, his nose wrinkled. With some peevish exclamation, he looked up at Cherry, who remained impassive. Another obscure exchange ensued. The gray hair seemed discontented. Then he closed the bag and stood up, and looked at me, eyes darting.
"Faruko,"
I said nervously, having forgotten my last name and hoping I would not be required to produce it. Cherry gave me a look.
"The papers."
"Right, right," I said, reaching in the top inside pocket of my jacket for the bank draft and the deposit slip, unfolding them in what I hoped was a casual way, checking them out before I handed them over.
Frantisek.
But just as I was extending my hand, bam! It happened like a gust of wind that blows through the house and slams a door loudly in a direction where you aren't expecting it. Victor Cherry stepped fast behind the gray hair and whacked him on the back of the head with the pistol butt so hard his cap flew off and his knees buckled, and down he went with a grunt. The Indonesian, still in his wall slouch, seemed as startled by this as me. He stiffened, our eyes connected in a sharp, what-the-fuck jolt that was almost like a glance between friends, and I couldn't understand why he wasn't moving away from the wall until I looked behind me and saw to my horror that Boris and Gyuri both had guns on him. Boris neatly resting the butt of the pistol in the cup of his left palm, and Gyuri, one-handed, with the bag of money, backing out the front door. Disconnected flash. Someone flitting from the kitchen and back. Youngish Asian woman. No, a boy. White skin. Blank, frightened eyes sweeping the room. ICAT print scarf. Long hair flying. Just as quickly gone. Someone's in back, I said rapidly, looking around, every direction, room wheeling around me like a carnival ride, and heart beating so wildly I couldn't make the words come out quite right. I wasn't sure if anyone heard me say it. Or if Cherry heard, at any rate, since he was hauling the gray hair up by the back of his jeans jacket, catching him in a chokehold, pistol at his temple, screaming at him in whatever Eastern European tongue and jostling him to the rear as the Indonesian unslouched himself from the wall, gracefully and carefully, and looked between Boris and me for what seemed like a long time.
You cunts are going to be sorry for this, he said quietly. Hands, hands, said Boris cordially, where I can see them. I don't got a weapon. Right there anyway. Right you are, said the Indonesian, just as cordially.
He looked me up and down with his hands in the air. Memorizing my face, I realized with a chill, image straight to data file. And then he looked at Boris.
I know who you are, he said.
Submarine glow of the fruit juice cooler. I could hear my own breath going in and out, clang of metal in the kitchen, indistinct cries.
Down, if you please, said Boris, nodding at the floor.
Obligingly, the Indonesian got to his knees and, very slowly, stretched himself full length, but he didn't seem rattled or afraid.
I know you,
he said again, voice slightly muffled. Fast darting movement in the corner of my eye, so fast I started. A cat, devil black, like a living shadow, darkness flying to darkness.
And who am I then? Boria from Antwerp, innit?
It wasn't true that he didn't have a weapon. Even I could see it bulging at his armpit.
Boria the Polak? Giggleweed Boria? Horst's mate? And so if I am? Said Boris genially.
The man was silent. Boris, tossing the hair out of his eyes with a flick of his head, made a derisive noise and seemed about to say something sarcastic. But just then Victor Cherry came out of the back, alone, pulling what looked like a set of flex cuffs out of his pocket. And my heart skipped to see, under his arm, a package of the correct size and thickness, wrapped in white felt and tied with baker's twine. He dropped a knee in the Indonesian's back and began to fumble with the cuffs at his wrists.
Get out, said Boris to me, and then, again,
my muscles had locked up and hardened. He gave me a little push.
Go! Get in the car!
Blankly, I looked around. I couldn't see the door. There wasn't a door. And then there it was, and I scrambled out so fast I slipped and nearly fell on a cat toy, out to the Range Rover puffing at the curb. Gyuri was keeping watch out front, on the street, in the light drizzle which had just begun to fall.
In, in,
he hissed, sliding into the back seat and waving me to come in after him, just as Boris and Victor Cherry burst out of the restaurant and hopped in too, and off we drove, at a sedate and anticlimactic speed. 10. In the car, out on the main road again, all was jubilation, laughter, high fives, while my heart was slamming so hard I could barely breathe.
What's going on?
I rasped several times, gulping for breath and looking back and forth between them. And then, when they kept ignoring me, babbling in a percussive mix of Russian and Ukrainian, all five of them, including Shirley Temple.
Angliski!
Boris turned to me, wiping his eyes, and slung his arm around my neck.
Change of plans, he said. That was all on the fly, improvised. We could have asked for nothing better. Their third man didn't show.
Catching them short-handed.
Flat-footed.
Pants down on the crapper.
You, I had to gasp to get the words out. You said, no guns.
Well, no one got hurt, did they? What difference does it make?
Why didn't we just pay?
Because we lucked out.
Throwing up his arms.
Once in a lifetime chance. We had the opportunity. What were they going to do? They were two. We were four.
If they had any sense, they should never have let us inside.
And yes, I know, only 40,000. But why should I pay them 1 cent if I don't have to? For stealing my own property.
Boris chortled.
Did you see the look on his face? Grateful Dead? When Cherry whipped him back of the dome?
You know what he was complaining about, the old goat?
Said Victor, turning to me, jubilantly.
Wanted it in euros.
What, dollars?
Imitating his peevish expression.
You brought me dollars?
Bet he wishes he had those dollars now.
I bet he wishes he kept his mouth shut.
I'd like to hear that phone call to Sasha.
I wish I knew the name of the guy that stood them up, because I would like to buy him a drink.
Wonder where he is.
He's probably at home in the shower.
Studying his Bible lesson. Watching Christmas Carol on television.
Waiting at the wrong place, most like.
My throat was so constricted I had to swallow to speak. What about that kid?
Eh?
It was raining, light rain pattering on the windshield, streets black and glistening. What kid?
Boy. Girl. Kitchen boy. Whatever.
What?
Cherry turned, still winded, breathing hard.
I didn't see anyone.
I didn't either.
Well, I did.
What'd she look like?
Young.
I could still see the freeze frame of the young, ghostly face, mouth slightly open.
White coat. Japanese looking.
Really?
Said Boris curiously.
You can tell apart by looking? Like where they are from? Japan? China? Vietnam?
I didn't get a good look.
Asian. He or she?
I think it's all girls that work in the kitchen there,
said Guri.
Macrobiotic. Brown rice and like that.
Now I really wasn't sure.
Well,
Cherry ran his hand over the top of his close-cropped hair.
Glad she ran, whoever, because you know else I found back there? Sawed off Mossberg 500.
Laughter and whistles at this.
Shit. Where was it? Grosdan didn't...
No. In a...
He gestured to indicate a sling.
What do you call it? Hanging under the table in some cloth-like. Just happened to see it when I was down on the floor, like, looked up. There it was, right over my head.
You didn't leave it there, did you?
No. I wouldn't have minded to take it, except it was too big and had my hands full. Unscrewed it and knocked the pin out and threw it in the alley. Also,
he pulled a silver snub-nosed pistol out of his pocket, which he passed over to Boris.
This.
Boris held it up to the light and looked at it.
Nice little concealed carry J-frame ankle holster in those bell-bottom jeans. But to his misfortune, he was not quick enough.
Flex cuffs,
said Guri to me, with slightly inclined head.
Vitya thinks ahead.
Well,
Cherry wiped the sweat from his broad forehead.
They are light and slim to carry, and they have saved me many times shooting people. I do not like to hurt anyone if I don't have to.
Medieval city. Crooked streets. Lights draped on bridges and shining off rain-peppered canals, melting in the drizzle. Infinity of anonymous shops, twinkling window displays, lingerie and garter belts, kitchen utensils arrayed like surgical instruments, foreign words everywhere. Snell bestellen, retro stale, showgirl sex boutique.
Back door was open to the alley,
said Cherry, elbowing off his sports coat and swigging from a bottle of vodka which Shirley T. had produced from under the front seat, hands a bit shaky and the face, the nose particularly, glowing a fragrant, stressed-out, Rudolph red.
They must have left it open for him, their third man, to come in at the back. I closed it and locked it, made Grosdan close and lock it, gun to his head. He was snivel and crying like baby.
That Mossberg,
Boris said to me, accepting the bottle passed over the front seat.
Evil, dirty thing. Sawed off, sprays pellets here to Hamburg, aim it way the fuck away from everyone, and still you will hit half the people in the room.
Good trick, no?
Said Victor Cherry, philosophically.
To say your third man is not there. Wait 5 minutes, please. Sorry, mix-up. He will be here in a moment. Well, he is all the time in back with the shotgun. Good double-cross, if they had thought of it.
Maybe they did think of it. Why else have the gun back there?
I think we had a narrow miss, is what I think.
There was one car pulled up front, scared Shirley and me,
said Gury.
While you were all in there, two guys we thought were in the shit, but was only two gays, French guys, looking for a restaurant.
But no one in the back, thank God. I got Grosdan on the floor and cuffed him to radiator,
Cherry was saying.
Ah, but...
He held up the felt-wrapped package.
First, this. For you.
He handed it over the seat to Gury, who, gingerly, with his fingertips, as if it were a tray he might spill, passed it to me. Boris, downing his slug, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand, chucked me gaily in the arm with the bottle, while humming, "We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas." Package on my knees, running my hands all around the edge. The felt was so thin that I sensed the rightness of it immediately with my fingertips. The texture and weight were perfect.
Go on,
said Boris, nodding.
Better open it. Make sure it's not the civics book this time. Where was it?
He asked Cherry, as I began to fumble with the string.
Dirty little broom closet. Piece of shit plastic briefcase. Grosdan took me right to it. I thought he might fuck around a bit, but burner at the head was all it took. No sense getting popped when all that good space cake still around for the taking.
Potter, said Boris, trying to get my attention, and then again.
Potter?
Yes? Lifting the briefcase.
This 40 rocks is going to Gury and Shirley T., keeping them green, for services rendered, because it is thanks to these two that we did not pay Sasha 1 cent for the favor of stealing your property. And Vitya,
reaching across to clasp his hand,
we are more than equal now. The debt is mine.
No, I can never repay what I owe you, Borya.
Forget it, is nothing.
Nothing? Nothing? Not true, Borya, because this very night I carry my life because of you, and every night until the last night.
It was an interesting story he was telling, if I had had ears to listen to it. Someone had fingered Cherry for some unspecified but apparently very serious crime which he had not committed, nothing to do with, perfectly innocent. The guy had rolled for reduced prison time, and unless Cherry, in turn, wanted to roll on his higher-ups,
unwise to do if I wish to keep breathing.
He was looking at 10 sticks, and Boris had saved the day because Boris had tracked down the slime bag in Antwerp and out on bail. And the story of how he had done this was very involved and enthusiastic, and Cherry was getting choked up and sniffing a bit, and there was more, and it seemed to involve arson and bloodshed, and something to do with a power saw. But by that point I wasn't hearing a word because I'd gotten the string untied, and streetlights and watery rain reflections were rolling over the surface of my painting. My goldfinch, which I knew incontrovertibly, without a doubt, before even turning to look at the verso, was real.
See,
said Boris, interrupting Vitya right in the heat of his story.
Looks good, no? Your Zolotaya Ptitsa? I told you we took care of it, didn't I?
running my fingertip incredulously around the edges of the board, like doubting Thomas across the palm of Christ. As any furniture dealer knew, or for that matter, St. Thomas, it was harder to deceive the sense of touch than sight, and even after so many years, my hands remembered the painting so well that my fingers went to the nail marks immediately, at the bottom of the panel. The tiny holes where, once upon a time, or so it was said, the painting was nailed up as a tavern sign, part of a painted cabinet, no one knew.
He's still alive back there?
Victor Cherry.
Think so?
Boris dug an elbow in my ribs.
Say something.
But I couldn't. It was real. I knew it. Even in the dark. Raised yellow streak of paint on the wing, and feathers scratched in with the butt of the brush. One chip on the upper left edge that hadn't been there before. Tiny mar, less than 2 millimeters, but otherwise, perfect. I was different, but it wasn't. And as the light flickered over it in bands, I had the queasy sense of my own life, in comparison, as a patternless and transient burst of energy, a fizz of biological static, just as random as the street lamps flashing past.
Oh, beautiful,
said Gyuri amiably, leaning in to look at my right side.
So pure, like a daisy, you know what I am trying to express?
He said, nudging me when I did not answer.
Plain flower, alone in a field. It's just...
He gestured. Here it is, amazing.
Do you know what I am saying?
He asked, nudging me again. Only I was still too dazed to reply. Boris, in the meantime, was murmuring half in English and half Russian to Vitya about the Titsa, as well as something else I couldn't quite catch. Something about mother and baby. Lovely love.
Still wishing you had phoned the art cops, huh?
He said, slinging his arm around my shoulder with his head close to mine. Exactly as when we were boys.
We can still phone them, said Gyuri,
with a shout of laughter, punching me on the other arm.
That's right, Potter. Shall we? No? Maybe not such a good idea anymore, huh?
He said across me to Gyuri, with a raised eyebrow. 11. When we turned into the garage and got out of the car, everyone was still high and laughing and recounting bits and pieces of the ambush in multiple languages. Everyone except me, blank and echoing with shock, fast cuts and sudden movements still reverberating from the dark at me, and too stunned to speak a word.
Look at him, said Boris,
breaking short from what he was saying and knocking me in the arm.
He looks like he just had the best blowjob of his life.
They were all laughing at me, even Shirley Temple. The whole world was laughter bouncing fractal and metallic off the tiled walls, delirium and phantasmagorica, a sense of the world growing and swelling like some fabulous blown balloon floating and billowing away to the stars. And I was laughing too, and I wasn't even sure what I was laughing at. Since I was still so shaken, I was trembling all over. Boris lit a cigarette. His face was greenish in the subterranean light.
Wrap that thing up, he said affably, nodding at the painting, and then we will stick it in the hotel safe and go and get you a real blowjob.
Gyuri frowned.
I thought we were going to eat first.
You are right. I am starving. Dinner first, then blowjob.
Blake's,
said Cherry, opening the passenger door of the Land Rover.
An hour, say?
Sounds good.
Hate to go like this,
Cherry said, plucking at the collar of his shirt, which was transparent and stuck to him with sweat.
Then again I could use a cognac. Some of the 100 euro stuff. I could install about a quart right now. Shirley, Gyuri,
he said something in Ukrainian.
He is saying, said Boris in the burst of laughter that followed.
He is telling Shirley and Gyuri that they are buying the dinner tonight. With,
Gyuri triumphantly hoisting the bag. Then, a pause. Gyuri looked troubled. He said something to Shirley Temple, and Shirley, laughing at him, deep peachy dimples, waved him off, waved off the bag that Guri tried to offer, and rolled his eyes when Guri offered it.